Everything's working, I hope. Good. It's good to be here. I felt so warm when I came in this church. It's a lot of friendly people here. That was very, very positive. Enjoyed the music. Great music, I'll tell you. I'm a Methodist, and we use an organ, and it's okay. But I noticed the Israeli flag. My wife's background is Jewish, and we hear a lot of information about the Jews at home. So we spent a lot of time studying the Jews and the Jewish history. And also, I noticed you got, a German flag over there. It's my background is German. I had to study German in college to get my doctorate. And I haven't retained much because I don't use it, but I did pass my exams. But I need to use it in 40 years. It's good to be here and explain to you why this issue is important. One of the main reasons it is important is because, and I have a book I'm working on, which should be out any day now, which basically is titled, Science is the Doorway to Christianity. Now, that may surprise some of you, because we don't see science as the doorway to, anything but a lot of work and grades and things like that. But in fact, when you study science, you are studying the world that God made. And you begin to appreciate our Creator when you study His creation. In fact, in the olden days, many ministers had to study science in order to be ordained. And it surprises people, but in fact, it was such an important part of theological education that science was not at that time called science. It was called theological history, because it was seen as theology. And sometimes they use the term natural history, but nonetheless, if you go to a bookstore and look at old books in the theology department, you will notice that a lot of them, it has the word theology on the title, but if you open the book up, you see it's math or physics or geology or biology, and you wonder, this is books in the wrong section. Why is it titled theology? Because natural theology was the study of science. Why was that so important in our church history? Because, again, they saw science as the doorway to Christianity. Now, we've kind of gotten away from that, and that I don't think is very good. But the problem is most pastors today don't have a good background in science. So I guess that's my job, and that's why I go into hundreds of churches to bring the message that, indeed, science is, for many people, the doorway to Christianity. Yeah. I'll give you a bit of background on myself. I was about 4 years old, I believe. Don't remember for sure. It's a long time ago. And my brother and I went to a little church down the street. I lived on 13 Mile Road, which is right across from Beaumont Hospital now. And we went to this church once. And at this church was a felt board. And the message of salvation was presented on that felt board. And I, in my heart at that time, accepted Christ. Fortunately, neither of my brothers did, and I, in college, as so many young people experience, I was convinced of evolution, and I became involved in the atheist movement. I remember my paleontology book, and there were pictures of modern man, Neanderthal man, built-down man, a few others, and it looked to me, just there they were. How could you deny evolution? There was the facts right in front of me. They even had fancy names, so it must be true. Like Australopithecine. He was right there among the others. And therefore, evolution must be true. And therefore, atheism must be true, because indeed, if evolution created us, then what's the role for God? So I guess I was a prodigal son for a few years, but I became very discouraged in the atheist movement because, ironically, there's scholarship. They always talk about, we're the smart ones. We're the intelligent ones. And we're the ones that are knowledgeable. In fact, many atheist organizations are called reason. Reason. We use reason. And I just found that wasn't true. It wasn't true at all. And so therefore, I went back to my roots because of science. Because I was pretty turned off by the churches, like many people are. But I was very turned on by science. I always loved science. And I ended up majoring in science at university, got 9 degrees, and taught science now for 45 years. So, the title of my talk is, Evolution is True, but it's going the wrong way. So I'm an evolutionist, so people say, are you an evolutionist? Yes, I am. But it's going the wrong way. And that's basically the information I will present. We couldn't work this before, but we'll see if it works now. I always pray before he catches on, because it needs prayer. We went to a church not too long ago, and we had two computers and two projectors. No matter what combination we tried, we couldn't get the thing to work. And so I had to give a talk extemporaneously. It was on abortion, which was interesting. But anyways, moving on. Is it going to work? It's on. Oh, can you fix that? I didn't pray before this presentation. Serves me right. So it's changing back there, but it's not changing on the screen. Well, as they work on it, I'll talk about my ministry. And my ministry is two parts. One, speaking. I've spoken in Asia, in Europe, in Canada, and in Africa, and so on. And 20 minutes, 40 minutes, you really can't convey much information. Hopefully what you can do is help people get excited about what you're talking about. And so therefore I've published about 50 books, about 20 I think which I have back there, and I've already ran out of three titles. And I think I'll probably run out of two more titles after today. And I sell them by what's a ministry, and I buy usually 100 books at a time. People think since you're the author they just give you boxes of books, where they don't. They give me two copies. And then I buy usually 100 copies at a time. And I get the author's discount, so I can get them low enough so that I sell them for 12 apiece or 2 for 20. And that pretty much covers my printing costs and so on. So I hope that you'll take advantage of that. And when you buy it, please read it. Okay? I know some people support me and they buy my books and they sit on the shelf and they never read them. But how do you... A lot of these books are pretty technical. How do you do that? Well, read a few pages a day. I even now read a few pages a day. I always carry books with me. And so therefore I have a few minutes. I can sit down when I'm waiting for my wife who's shopping. I just sit down and read a few pages. And it's easy to read two or three pages. And lo and behold, a couple of weeks go by and you've read the whole book. All right, it's working now. Okay, let's see. Okay, Genesis 5, 1 through 2. God created mankind in the likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them. And so this is basically where we came from. We came from creation by God. Now, when you believe we came from apes, well, they don't actually believe we came from apes. Us and apes had a common ancestor, which was a ape. So they really teach we came from apes. And there you can see the earth from space. When you look at the Earth from space, I'm amazed that so many of the astronauts became, or that reinforced their Christian values, because so many have said, and I have a number of friends that are astronauts and have spent some time in space looking at the Earth, and they say things like, if you don't believe, when you look at the Earth in space, you will believe. It's just amazing to see this planet floating on nothing, as the scriptures say, circling sun, and this is one of the most popular, this isn't a real good picture of it for some reason, but this is one of the most popular pictures NASA has ever taken. And when you look at the animal world, I mean, Darwin once said he loved to beat dogs. Really, that's what he said, Charles Darwin, the founder of evolution. He loved to beat dogs. And when you look at this dog, I mean, you gotta help. There's something wrong with you can't love this dog. Right? I mean, they look just so cute. And for some reason, we just have a huge attraction to puppies. And when I present this, people say, don't you like cats? Well, yeah, I like cats too, so I had to add this picture. So there you go. If you love cats, this cat is adorable. I actually love cats and dogs. I love animals. In a medical school, we had to kill a rat and dissect it. It was a living rat. And we had to kill it while it was still we had to kill it. And we had to kill it later because his heart had to beat so we could get the preservative in the veins. So we had to knock it out, put the preservative in the veins, and then we had to kill it. And that was the only time in my life I ever felt like passing out. I really had a hard time with that. And I didn't pass out, but boy, I'll tell you, I've never felt that way in my life before or since. I love animals. And fortunately, this is when I was a student in medical school, and fortunately I didn't pass out, but I'll never forget that. People say, well, how can you dissect a cadaver? That was easy. They're already dead, number one. And number two, they drain the blood so that you don't have to deal with the blood when you dissect a cadaver. But dissecting a cadaver was one of the best parts of medical school. And there you can see the human body, amazingly complex. And my focus in teaching has been anatomy. I teach anatomy and physiology and the wonders of a human body. And while teaching, people can really understand, indeed, as the scriptures say, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And there's the cell. The problem evolutionists have is the origin of the cell. The cell is the most complex machine in the entire universe, period. And they'll tell you that in the science textbooks. And yet they have no idea where the cell came from. As a matter of fact, now, some eminent evolutionists believe that the cell came from another planet. This is called the Superman hypothesis. And they really believe that life came from another planet. But the problem is, how did it get there? I mean, that just moves the problem somewhere else. It's like so many people, they're depressed, their life's not going well. So they think if they move to California, they'll be happy. And guess what happens? They move to California, and they're not happy. The problem is not living in Michigan or Ohio or Indiana. The problem is they themselves. And this is why the suicide rate, one reason the suicide rate is high in California. I had a good friend of mine. His family was from, Ohio. And they moved to California. And his father, my friend's father, wasn't happy. And they found his car a few months later parked by the, famous bridge where so many people commit suicide from? The Golden Gate Bridge. They found his car and they never found his body. And so they know that he committed suicide. Well, moving to California isn't going to solve all of your problems. I know you know that, but... Okay, definition of evolution. It's not change over time or change in allele frequencies. Those are fancy definitions they give you to cover up what they're really talking about. What they're really talking about is, this is my favorite definition for evolution. From the goo to you by way of the zoo. And that's really what they teach. From the goo to you by way of the zoo. So we started out as goo and we ended up with, you know, amoebas and ended up the evolutionary hierarchy and we ended up to man. And Steve Hawking, one of the most famous scientists that ever lived, he's almost worshipped. There's, when he went to speak, he had thousands and thousands of people attend, even though he could not speak. He had to use his computer. And there you can see he's trying to speak. He wrote this book on, kind of his last book, on the big questions. And one of the big questions was, where did everything come from? And instead of reading all this, I'll just tell you what he concluded. You know where everything came from? This is one of the most eminent scientists that ever lived. This is what he explained where everything came from. Basically, in the beginning was nothing. Sounds like the Bible. In the beginning was nothing. And out of nothing came time, space, matter, and energy. How? Just popped into existence. And we believe the same thing, except we believe there was nothing. And then time, energy, matter, and what's the last? Let's see. Time, energy, matter, and space. We believe those all came into existence by God. And so in many ways, you'll see that science has confirmed what we believe. We came into existence as a result of God, who created everything from nothing. So, the Bible had it right a couple thousand years ago before Stephen Hawking came along. He just confirmed what the Bible has to say. And moving along, I'll just skip this. These laws include, when Hawking was talking, the four forces. The four forces that held the universe together are gravity, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, and electromagnetism. The problem is, how do those forces work? You know, gravity works. If you try it, I bet it'll work. It always works, but why? Einstein called this action at a distance. Why does gravity work? Let's try to stop gravity. Let's put something between the ground and us. Let's put a vacuum. That should do it. No, gravity still works. Let's put a thick lead plate. Gravity still works. Nothing we put between us and the earth stops gravity. Gravity must go through the lead plate. It must go through the vacuum. It must go through everything. How does it work? We don't know. It just does. And the scripture just read earlier talks about that God is the preserver. He preserves everything. He controls everything. And this is really the best explanation we have. Now, when science comes along with a better explanation, fine. But as it is, so many things we can only explain by God. And I'll move straight ahead. And Darwin said, when he created his theory, and I'll give you a little bit of background. Darwin had a hard time in life. He had a lot of illness. And he lost his favorite child, Anna, when she was 10. She had tuberculosis. She died at 10, age 10. And he became mad at God. And he became so mad, he wanted to murder God. How do you murder God? You murder God by coming up with another reason for the creation. You come up with another creator. And in fact, his own words were, it's his theory, it's like committing a murder. He wanted to murder God. And he murdered God in the minds of many people. About 98% of all scientists accept evolution. Leading scientists, I should add. 98% of all leading scientists, eminent scientists, accept evolution. How is he able to convince so many people not to accept the Creator, God? Well, he was able to do that because he came up with another explanation. And that other explanation is mutations. Now, that's been added. Actually, he didn't come up with mutations. He had no idea where genetic variety came from. He didn't know. But it's there. But now, the theory of evolution says mutation creates variety. And then that variety is selected by natural selection. The survival of the fittest. Now, that's pretty obvious. Obviously, if you're more fit, by definition, you're more apt to survive. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But Darwin never was able to come up with an explanation for the arrival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest, okay. Arrival of the fittest, he had no idea. Now, the theory is the arrival of the fittest is due to mutations. What are mutations? Mutations are changes in the DNA. And I worked in the medical school, I did research on mutations. So I spent a lot of time studying mutations. And virtually all mutations are harmful. Virtually all mutations are harmful. And that, you know, to me that's so obvious. Well, of course, I worked with that. If somebody said, you know, your child is funny looking, he's a mutant. It's not a compliment. I'm not trying to say something nice. If they called you a mutant, well, you know that's an insult. Okay, so mutations, we know are not, we know why they're not good. We know why they're mistakes. It's like typographical errors. If you make a typographical error, I bet that letter is not better. If you make a spelling mistake, I bet that paper you're working on is not better. Do you think that improves things? Well, you know it doesn't. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Most mistakes in my life, by the way, have not been beneficial. Now, there are beneficial mistakes. Every now and then, I'm hoping the bank will make a mistake, and when I deposit $200, it'll put $200,000. And I think I'll be waiting for a long time before that happens. But that'd be a beneficial mistake for me. But that's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen. And so I'm not being realistic when I bank my future on a mistake from the bank. So we know in our lives the vast majority of mistakes are harmful. Well, how are we going to get here through mistakes? We're not. Okay? And mistakes we know, mutations, the evolutionists tell us, it created us. So you are the result of billions of mistakes. So look at your neighbor, if there's somebody nearby. Look at them and say, you're the result of billions of mistakes. Go ahead, look at your neighbor. Now, they know you're not being serious. But when I teach at the Christian high schools, some of the kids say, and I'm being serious, you are the result of billions of mistakes. And they have a good time with that. But if you think of that, it's ludicrous. And if you think beyond that, why in the world do we accept evolution? Because that's what we get, so many of us, hopefully most of you don't, and I understand you have a lot of creation events here, which is good. But when you go to school, I was fooled by this, when you go to school, all you hear is evolution. And now the evolution is our concern because, by the way, the recent Gallup poll found 40% of Americans are young Earth creationists. 40%! And the evolutionists look at this and they say, that's terrible. Only 20% of Americans are atheistic evolutionists. Only 20%. 40% are young Earth creationists and 40% are theistic evolutionists. God used evolution to create man, which is, of course, ridiculous, but that's what 40% believe. So why do so many people believe in theistic evolution and so many people are atheists and they accept the evolutionary explanation for our existence? I mean, you can see it's ludicrous. And when I present this to evolutionists, they say, well, the alternative is God, and that's worse. What? You're the result of billions of mistakes. Well, that's the best theory we have. We'll figure it out. Hey, give us time. Darwin only lived 150 years ago. Just be patient. We'll figure it out. But I can't accept God. And therefore, they accept evolution. And they are bombarded, and I taught at the college level for 45 years, they're bombarded in the textbooks everywhere with Darwinism, with evolution. Because when it's all you hear, you accept it. And you can see in the history of countries, why did so many people accept Nazism? This is one of my best-selling books, which surprised me, but I guess I think it's well done and interesting. But the pastor said, when you come to Indianapolis, make sure you bring a couple of boxes of that Darwin book because I sell those out right away. And I said, well, that's good. And it's interesting to read, and we have a lot of interest in that period, probably because I would guess in this church how many people have at least partly a German background. Raise your hand. How many people are there? About half the church. And so we are concerned about our country, where we are our grandfather, great-grandfather, my great-grandfather was born in Germany, if I can say that. My Großvater war geboren auf Deutschland. After a year, 1800, and I forgot what part. But anyways, that's our background. My grandfather spoke German in the household. So I did pick up a few words like Mutter and Vater, and of course those are easy, but a few things, and Auf Wiedersehen and all that stuff I could say. But it's our background, so we have an interest in that area. So why did so many people accept Nazism, accept the idea that we indeed are a result of evolution, and therefore some of us are more evolved than others, therefore the inferior races are Jews and Slavics and Poles and just about everybody else. And so why would they accept this? Well, because they heard this over and over in society. Hitler said, once you control the schools, you'll control the education. Okay, here's a picture of Darwin. And he was active in converting all he knew to murder God. And he was very successful. He was a good salesperson, one has to admit. Like Hitler was a good politician, Darwin was a good salesperson. He really was very good. And this is evolution. We start out with the goo at the corner here. And you can see we have mankind at the... Right? If I get this to work, right there. There's mankind. And there's the goo. So that's what it teaches. And, by the way, when I say this, people have said, oh, come on. They don't believe, I mean, I don't accept evolution, but they don't believe that we're the result of billions of mistakes. They don't believe that. Well, I'll quote some eminent scientists. Ernst Mayr, one of the most eminent scientists that ever lived, he said, ultimately, all variation is due to mutation. He was German, by the way. Ernst Mayr was. Lived to be 99. He wrote 10 books in his 90s. Very prolific author. Taught at Harvard University. Theodosius Dobzhansky, he said mutation is the only source of the raw material and hence of evolution. That's what they believe. And here, the concern I have is, because a third of my family is black, so I have concern that evolution was very racist. In fact, and I've got several books on this, a major cause of racism in this country was Darwinism. Major factor. And still with us today, we still see all kinds of concerns about racism. Do you know that Jefferson accepted the scriptures? And the early founding fathers, Washington, etc., accepted the scriptures. And they knew that Genesis taught all men are created equal. And they knew that slavery was wrong. And they said this. And said we must eliminate slavery because the Bible says it's wrong. And they worked at elimination of slavery and were very successful in certain programs. They wanted to educate blacks. They encouraged intermarriage. In fact, if a black and a white intermarried back in Washington's day, they would give you money, incentive for the races to intermarry, because they felt that eventually that's the only way of eliminating racism was intermarriage. It's the only way we can do it. So we must encourage this behavior. Well, what happened? Guess what? 1859, Darwin released his famous Origin of Species book, and that changed everything. And racism was introduced in America and accepted largely because of Darwinism. And this is one good example. And you can see a Hottentot on here. And get this to work. And that's a gorilla. Well, I've never seen a Hottentot look like that. And I've never seen a gorilla that looked like that. This is called artistic license. And at the Creation Expo yesterday, we had one of the speakers who really focused on the lies that evolution teaches. I noticed on your bulletin board there you have an article by Jeffrey Tompkins, a friend of mine, that basically found the difference genetically between us and chimps is not 98, as they say. It is closer to 85%, which means there's about a half a billion genetic differences between apes and humans. There's a chasm between apes and humans. Well, you don't read this much in the literature because evolutionists don't want this to be true. Okay, and Darwin said at some future period, not very distant, the civilized races of man will almost certainly eliminate and replace the savage races as part of the process of evolution by natural selection. And this is what he said. And Darwin was one of the most respected scientists of the last century, and so people believe that indeed inferior races, okay, the less civilized races, will become extinct. And, well, we can see that in Margaret Sanger. I have a lecture on presentation on abortion. And Margaret Sanger's, one of her major goals was to reduce the African-American population. You do that by abortion. And we know now that even today, the vast majority of abortions are among African-Americans compared to their population. They're 13% of the population and something like 70% of all abortions are on African Americans. And Margaret Sanger made it clear as to why. And you can see Darwin is honored throughout the world. I collect postage stamps. And there are hundreds of stamps honoring Charles Darwin. And these are just a few of many. And so we even get, and one from Cuba, I selected that because of communist country. And this, I forget what that country was from, but you can see why, even on our postage stamps, we're licking stamps in the olden days at least. Now we just peel them off the paper and putting it on our letters, pictures of Darwin. So you can see how it permeates society. That's Russia. And you can see how they honored him. And ultimately, Darwin was successful. 98% of leading scientists accept evolution, and the doorway to atheism is evolution. And in my atheist days, I wondered why we spent so much time talking about evolution. And so I asked some of the people I worked with, including Madeline Murray O'Hare. You've heard of her, Madeline Murray O'Hare. But I worked with her. I got along pretty well with her. A lot of people didn't, but she liked all my articles. So every article I wrote, she published. And she told me how great my articles were, so I thought, well, gee, that's nice, Madeline. But So many said that, as I said, evolution is the doorway to atheism. So you want to convert people to atheism, you teach evolution. And that's where I learned that from. So I'm just repeating what I learned when I was involved in the atheist movement. And I did a whole book on this subject. And indeed, I show that there's so many people who became atheists as a result of evolution. I'll give you one example, Karl Marx. There's no person in the world that has probably caused more problems than Karl Marx. We still see that today in Iran and in Venezuela and a few communist countries that are left. And Karl Marx, you may be surprised, he was Jewish background, but as so many, like my wife and so many others, he was part of a Christian world. And Karl Marx became a Christian and would write on sidewalks, Jesus Saves, wrote articles about Christianity. And when he was in high school, in fact, it said that if Karl Marx retained his Christian beliefs, he would have become a famous writer, probably more famous than C.S. Lewis. His writing was excellent from high school. It's really well done. Well, guess what happened? He was introduced to Charles Darwin and became an atheist. And not only an atheist, but he then opposed what he formerly proselytized for. He was the one who said that God, Christianity, is the opiate of the people. And then, since then, communism has strongly opposed Christianity, especially, and has proselytized for Darwinism. So we can see how much the world has changed. I'll give you one more quick example. Joseph Stalin was in seminary, studying to be a priest in the Russian Orthodox Church, and then he came across a book written by Charles Darwin, and he mentioned to his seminarians, "I just read this book. It's really exciting. You know there's no God. How do I know this? I read Charles Darwin. And here's the book I read. You should read it too." And he became an atheist, and of course the rest is history relative to what happened in Marxist Russia. And so indeed, it changed the world. Incredibly changed the world. It's still with us today. The problems that these people started, we still see talked about today. I know it's kind of a fad to call people a racist, and they call Trump routinely a racist, and I don't know if he is or not, but I've been called a racist a number of times. I guess it's a name we now call people, which trivializes the idea, I suppose. But anyways, one more point I'll stress. This was a discovery which made, it's kind of hard to see it, by discovery speeds up evolution. And this was made in the 30s by Hermann J. Müller, a German. And he basically discovered that putting fruit flies in a petri dish and turning on an x-ray machine increases the level of mutations. And so he said we could speed up evolution by putting animals in x-ray machines, zapping them, and then we'll speed up evolution. In fact, in 1920, Hermann J. Müller discovered x-rays can increase the mutation rate by as much as 100 times. And you might say, well, this is ridiculous. I mean, you all know when you go to the doctor and they do an x-ray, they hopefully, when I go to the dentist, for example, they cover most of my body with a lead shield. We know x-rays are harmful. We know they cause mutations. And we know mutations are harmful. Well, they were so optimistic that mutations are helpful in the 1920s, they gave Müller a Nobel Prize, one of the most prestigious prizes in the world, for his discovery. And what he said in 1946, it was awarded to him. And he basically said, I think I have it here, the quote. He said, basically, this is a discovery which we can use to speed up evolution. So you gals, when you're pregnant, you go to your local doctor and say, zap me with a couple thousand Rentgens. Let's see what happens. Maybe I'll have a genius. Yeah, right. You know that's not going to happen. In fact, someone said, Well, when I next time I go to the airport and fly, instead of putting my baggage through, I'll say, could I just go through there? Get some x-rays and it'll improve things. Well, it's not going to improve things. We know why it's not going to improve things. And briefly, we know there are things like hot spots, which means that the mutations occur in one particular place. And when I studied cancer, I studied mutations, and this is one thing we looked at. And are beneficial mutations common? Well, I did some literature research, and I found that beneficial mutations were rare, if you can read this. There was 400, about 500,000 total mutations. 186 were seen as beneficial. So I looked at all those beneficial mutations, and guess what I found? They were not beneficial for us, and they were often not beneficial for animals, but some, like seedless fruit, was beneficial for us. Not in us, but for the fruit, because we don't have to worry about seeds. But, of course, the fruit has a problem. It can't reproduce. And watermelon, the same thing. And one important discovery they made was a cow that produced more muscle, was more tender, was low in fat, ideal. And there's the cow. The Arnold Schwarzenegger of the cow world. And this was caused by mutation. But they found out this mutation, basically what it did is it damaged a gene, a breaks, so when the muscle began to develop, it didn't stop when it's supposed to because the breaks were broken. So it was a mutation. So I guess it was beneficial. Well, there's all kinds of problems, and so therefore this is not used anymore. Classic example which Darwin used was Seth Wright came up with a discovery where sheep had a mutation and they had short legs. So they didn't have to jump over high fences. So they didn't have to build high fences for these sheep. They're called Ancon sheep. And there they are. You can see the middle one is an Ancon sheep. So you have short fences. Well, this turned out to be a mess. And in the 30s, they discovered that this had all kinds of problems. It was beneficial. Yeah, it had short legs, but that's about all. And now it's no longer used because of the problems. So some of these that we see as beneficial, and here you can see a man with the same disease, achondroplasia. And this, what they do, in case you're curious, they break the legs, they pull them apart, they grow together, they break them again, they pull them apart, they grow together, and that's how they have to try to fix this. So they're somewhat normal, but it's not a beneficial mutation. And this was known in the 30s in relative to the Ancon sheep. It's still in the book in the 70s. When I taught zoology in the 70s, it was still in my textbook. Why is it in there so long? Well, it's a good example, and they don't want to take it out. And when I gave this lecture in Canada, there's one of the professors that said, you must be wrong. There must be some beneficial mutations. I said, well, find one. Send it to me. He said, I found one later. Actually, I wrote to him, and he said, I'm looking. And then he said he found one, and here it is. This guy has six fingers. And boy, he can climb trees like you wouldn't believe. Really good. With six fingers. And you can see it looks pretty good here. Well, when I did some research on this, and I knew about this because this is common among the Amish, it may be beneficial to climb trees, but as a whole, most people with this mutation don't have these nice, neat fingers like he does. In fact, this is more common. It's a mess. And so you have to spend time amputating because it's not an improvement. And so I have yet to find a clearly example of a beneficial mutation that helps evolution. I'm not saying they don't exist, but I have yet to find one. And so, what do we have? Well, there you see a mess. Lots of mutations. Here's a child born with an extra arm. Now, that would be useful. With mothers trying to cook dinner and carry a baby, that would really be useful. But in this case, they had to lop off both the arms. There was a problem. This is good for the farmer because he can charge admission to see the sheep. And he's a turtle with two heads. There's a woman in this state who's a teacher who has two heads. That's a twin that didn't separate. And here we can see Hertzuism, the young man here, Hertzu. He's not real popular with the girls. And how does he find a wife? Well, there are women with Hertzuism and they marry, typically. And here, this is not an Einstein. In fact, this child died. And Russia did experiments. They blew off an atomic bomb. and they required the women of the town to line up and look at it. They didn't want to get blind, so they gave them blindfolds. And they stood there while they were pregnant, and they blew off this bomb, and then they evaluated the children that were born, and guess what? We have a home museum in Russia with all these deformed fetuses and embryos. And there you can see some of them. So we know increasing the mutation rate, we know it's rarely going to be beneficial. And here's one example that is beneficial to the bacteria. Bacteria, if I can explain this, bacteria, if we have any doctors in here that'll, or nurses that will help explain this, this streptomycin, it fits in this active site, it turns the ribosome off, and the bacteria can't reproduce protein, can't make protein. So the mutation changes this active site, streptomycin doesn't fit in, so therefore we have a bacteria which is, they call it super, but it's not. We have a bacteria which is antibiotic resistant. So they call that, evolutionists do, a beneficial mutation. But what do they do when you have a patient with a lot of these antibiotic resistant bacteria in them? Anybody know what they do? Any nurses? They send them home. Why? Because at home, you end up with a lot of non-mutants, and these are not as apt to survive. These are weaker. They're beneficial in an environment with a lot of antibiotics, but at home with all these normal guys, they can't compete. They can't compete, so they die off. So to summarize, the case against evolution is absolutely, unequivocally overwhelming. You have to wonder, why do people believe such foolish things? Well, it's part of our environment. And I've talked to many colleagues, and I mentioned this to them, and they say, well, I still believe it. I don't want to get fired. They believe it because it's part of our environment. So science is the doorway to Christianity. And this is why it's important that we know in the church now, Ken Ham stresses this, something like 80% of the people reared in the church leave. Some come back, but a high percent leave. I did. I know my friends did. The church I go to now, a lot of the young people go to college and never come back. So why do so many leave? Because they're seduced by evolution. And if we help, as this church does, if we help people understand, it's not true. They're not going to leave. They're less likely to leave. Studies, and one of my major concerns is church retention. And why do so many people leave the church? Well, there are several reasons, but one of the major reasons is they go to college, they learn evolution, there's no role for God in life, so therefore, they become atheists. So this is a central area, and I'm glad to know that this church stresses the importance of this. We need to teach science in this. Well, I guess you do, so that's good. And that's one way of retaining the young people. If they have a thorough grounding in science, there's no way they could be seduced by Darwinism. It's not going to happen, as I was. And so, and I'm a good example, as so many, I was seduced by Darwinism. I'm ashamed. My wife doesn't like me to mention this. Gee, Jerry, you're smarter than this. How can you say this to people? Well, I work hard and try to be smart, but it can seduce the best of us. And it does. So talk to your kids about this. Just one suggestion, and then I'll close the presentation with prayer. If you can get together a creation group once a month, invite all the churches once a month. There's films you can show. You will then be able to expose a lot of the young people to this information, and they will not be seduced by evolution. They will not be affected by evolution. And therefore, they will retain the creation worldview, but you have to be repeatedly exposed. 40-minute lecture is not going to do it. You need a lot more exposure. So buy my books. By the way, I sell them, I think I told you, for my cost. So I'm not, my wife, she just yesterday, she complained. Now, Jerry, we got a $3,000 book deal. You better be able to pay that back because we're spending more money than you come in. I says, well, I'll go to this, really good church and they'll buy lots of books and I'll come home to, and I can pay off our visa. So anyways, it's again great to be here, and I'll close our presentation with prayer. Thank you, Lord.